category is women's football, reported to you by two siblings across the Atlantic. I am Theo Lloyd-Hughes. This is Relatively Football, and I'm here, as always, with my co-host and sister, Flo. How's it going, Flo?
Yeah, good, thank you. I am exhausted from a lot of football this weekend, and I think I'm just hitting my sort of like end of season exhaustion. Everything is just sort of coming to a climax all at once, and I'm actually looking forward to a bit of a break in between the season ending and before we get the Euros. So yeah, but what an exciting game to be at. So I do feel very privileged to have been there today, no matter how tired I feel right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we're only human. Burnout is real, and the time, the energy it takes to be a part of the brilliant narrative that is all this women's football, the Women's Champions League, the FA, WSL, NWSL, Women's Championship, multiple European leagues, like you said, the Olympics coming up. It is a lot, and I think mental health, physical health, taking breaks is always so important. And yeah, it's always a privilege to get your time on a Sunday, and I feel the same way. We'll get straight to King's Meadow then, Flo. How was it? It finished Chelsea 4, Bayern Munich 1, and Chelsea have launched themselves into the Champions League final. A dream for Emma Hayes and this squad.
It was amazing. That's the only way I can really explain it. It was just amazing. So exciting, so entertaining. It had everything, really, bar a penalty or a sending off. Those are the only things we're missing. And I actually do think Jess Carter potentially could have been sent off for her elbow. But yeah, it just was so good. Just non-stop, so tense, so chaotic, end-to-end. And a lot of Chelsea personnel in the house, which I think added a lot of atmosphere. And very loud Bayern press officer, as well as Bayern coaches and squad members that were in the stands, who made a lot of noise as well. So I think that was really good, because it didn't have the atmosphere that I think you normally get at behind closed doors games. Obviously, there was a lot more on the line, and I haven't been to any of the Champions League games so far that Chelsea have been in at home when they've been behind closed doors. So I can't really get a sense of what the atmospheres might have been like then. But certainly so much tension because of, you know, how much Bayern wanted it as well. And their coach was absolutely fuming about the fact that they wasted this opportunity, and certainly felt like they were the better team across the two legs. Probably would agree with him, actually. I think especially today, they wasted a lot of opportunities. They had a lot of corners, a hell of a lot of corners as well. They put Anke Treberger under a lot of pressure. Didn't quite get enough opportunities with those corners that they had. So yeah, but what a game.
So to kind of give you the whole narrative of the game, listener, Chelsea got off to a perfect start with a brilliant team goal. Sam Kerr playing through Fran Kirby, as we see a lot of, and she slotted away in the 10th minute. And then Bayern struck back with what they're kind of becoming very known for, at least when you watch them in this Champions League, this tie, these last two legs. Sarah Zadrazil scoring a flow. I don't know how you would describe that shot. A pinger, a stunner, a screamer. Yeah, I love the way Anne Katrenberger didn't even attempt to make a save as it swerved over her head into the top right-hand corner.
Yeah, she was sort of like, she did that thing where she had a really wide stance. So it's almost before she's going to choose which side to move to, but she does neither and then just kind of stands still and is like, oh shit, that was kind of...
Well, and as Flo alluded to, it came from a very well-worked Bayern Munich short corner, which was a bit of a theme in the game. They have another chance kind of skipping ahead in the 87th minute from a corner, and another chance I think was in the 90th minute where it bobbles past Anne Katrenberger. And, you know, if Bayern had scored one of these multiple set-piece opportunities, it would have been lights out for Chelsea. Anyway, so it's at 1-1, kind of going into halftime. But then G has a free kick, which comes back off the wall. But then she scores the rebound, takes it beautifully, which I actually think is underrated as a technique, because, you know, everything is set up for a set piece. The way you're taking it, the angle, the wall, the keeper's stance, other players running, maybe they're going to follow up the chance. And then when G hits that, I actually think it's really hard to do, to hit like a free kick immediately after
you've
hit one.
That was a funny one. That one I felt like was a bit of a pee roller, is what I called it on the radio. It was a strange one. Like, she didn't really make a lot of contact on it, and it just, the ball sort of rolled through everyone because they weren't quite reacting fast enough. Yeah,
they weren't ready
and
for
she
it.
Just kind of like made some sort of connection with it, not very good contact, and then it all just sort of rolled through like almost sort of 15 bodies right into the corner.
It was crazy
how no one at that point just thought, I'm gonna put my foot through this. It was amazing. It was such a strange goal. It was like slow motion.
Well, it's underrated, the technique, you know, like you said, it was a dodgy connection, but the technique on that is the mental technique, being the first to react, knowing that, you know, if you're lining up for this free kick, you don't know it's going to bounce back. Right? I just thought it was such a smart play from G.
I don't know if it was that clever. Not to be rude to G, because obviously G is an incredible player and she's a legend, part of Chelsea's success. But at the same time, the ball kind of bounced straight back to her. So it's not like, you know, the ball moved to a different direction and she had to chase it and react first. Like, it did just bounce off the wall directly back to her and she was like, oh, okay, I'll have a go.
Let us know how intelligent you think G's second chance free kick was. Do a poll. So that has the game at 2-1. We're going to go to extra time and penalties, but then arguably my favourite goal of the match, although like Flo alluded to, it might be because of the celebrations. It might be because of what was on the line. It might be because the player who scored it and the player assisted it are at two polar opposites of their standing in the Chelsea squad. But in the 84th minute, Pernilla Harder gets a tiny touch on a brilliant ball from Jess Carter and gives the breakthrough to make it 3-1, sending Chelsea through. And then in the 95th minute, Fran Kirby puts the icing on the cake into an open goal on a big, big counter-attack. Flo, I kind of highlight that goal because Pernilla Harder obviously became the most expensive player in women's football history and has been the kind of the extra piece, although I think Fran Kirby and Sam Kerr get a lot of the credit, right? They do. It feels like Pernilla Harder has been the piece to kind of take them to the next step, get to the Champions League final. Obviously, for Pernilla Harder, with all her kind of runner-up places at Wolfsburg, this is a big deal for her as well. And I thought the celebrations on this goal, especially the way she ran straight to Jess Carter, a player who has struggled to get in the Chelsea
team. Jess Carter redemption season. Here we go, baby.
Here we go, baby. I mean, it was a phenomenal ball. It's the kind of ball which, you know, forwards love because they don't need to put anything on it. You know, she gets the tiniest of touches and it ends up in the back of the net. And I think Jess Carter has come under some criticism. Maybe she could have been sent off in this game. Definitely in the first leg, a lot of players like Leupolz and even Sam Kerr at times had to track back to cover
her. I thought Leupolz was poor today, actually. She was by far Chelsea's worst player. She made that obviously dodgy back pass, which Anke Treberger was lucky enough that it just sort of rolled past the outside of her post. But then she lost the ball a couple of times in midfield, and that both times I think there were two situations where that gave Bayern a really good run on goal. So I thought she was maybe just a little bit sloppy today. She was a kind of Chelsea's get out of jail card in the first leg. So, you know, obviously everyone has a bad game occasionally, so I don't think it's a crisis for her. But I just thought it was interesting how she's been really good for Chelsea this season, but I just thought she was particularly poor today against her own club. I don't know if that had a factor. And I do also think that she and Kirby were targeted quite a lot. They didn't get a lot of time on the ball. So obviously, normally Leupolz probably wouldn't find that when she's playing in the WSL. And suddenly, you know, she was being closed down quite quickly and couldn't really keep control of the ball as much as she would have done. And I thought Kirby was getting fouled non-stop, but she was really strong to come back from some of that. They were really, really kind of getting into her. I thought Magdalene Eriksson was phenomenal.
Clearance off the line in the 90th minute was amazing. Yeah,
just kind of, you know, the person that you want back in your team, obviously, to bring it home, captain, just doing what she does best. She's just a warrior. Just unbelievable, really. And I thought Neve Charles as well, playing at left back, that was really,
I know,
really
I was
going to
say, dropping John Anderson.
Yeah, and I think John Anderson has been Chelsea's weakest link across the whole season, for sure. I think if you look at one player in that squad, you're like, probably not up to, not the squad, but in the starting 11, who's not up to the level that the rest of them are, you'd probably say it's her. So she was definitely targeted in the first leg. She's been targeted in other games, or been the weak link in other games. That City game as well, she was probably Chelsea's worst player on the pitch. So it's going to be interesting to see what Emma Hayes does from now on. Neve Charles is just proving unbelievably versatile. She was really good today, but I don't think, you know, necessarily want to go with that all the time. But Jess Carter's being a fantastic backup right back, and she's just so good from dead ball opportunities. So maybe this is the way they're going to go. But you would imagine they're going to try and bring in a left back in the summer because, yeah, Anderson does stand out as the weak link at the moment.
Where does this rank on Emma Hayes' career achievements so far, Flo?
I mean, she said number one, 100%.
So we have to take her word for it. Flo, you know, that's it.
It's funny. Jesse and I were walking back to the station and talking about what now, because it was a huge day, obviously, for the club. Massive celebrations. Spice Girls playing in the changing room afterwards. Emma Hayes drinking champagne on the post-match
Zoom. There
we go.
It
was a huge moment. And, you know, I think... there was almost like a sigh of relief in some ways, but also absolute elation and celebration. But at the same time, will it all be in vain come May 16th at like 6 p.m. if Barca do just absolutely smash them? And I think that's the only thing I would be a little bit concerned about is you've made it this far, you've just... to not then get that final piece of the puzzle, because that's what Emma Hayes wants. That's what she's always wanted. And she, you know, she's done it with Arsenal as an assistant, but this is what she wants to do as, you know, the head honcho, as the main coach. And it would just be so horrible to go all that way to achieve this with this side and then not manage to win in the final. But it's going to be a good final. But I do think Barca are going to be too good for them.
You're obviously teasing the winner of the second semi-final tie that took place this morning. Before we get to that, Flo, just before we leave King's Meadow, there's been a lot of rumours on Twitter from German broadcasters that the Bayern Munich team were treated very poorly. They were given no showers. There was just a couple of chairs in the dressing room. The dressing room only had a pop-up port-a-loo toilet. The balls they were given to train with were not the same as the match day balls. Can you confirm any of this or deny any of this? Or is this just a kind of conspiracy theory from the Bayern Munich press team?
I don't know really anything about that. I know Katie White did ask the Bayern Munich manager in the post-match Zoom about that. And I don't think he answered the question. It was a bit confusing because obviously they had an interpreter who was sort of reading out the answers in English afterwards. And I think he sort of skirted the question, but I kind of need to follow up on that. I'm not 100% sure. I too saw what you were talking about, but beyond that, I'm not really sure.
You couldn't see any balls being switched out on the sidelines?
I didn't see any of that. The UEFA Champions League, unlike the Men's Champions League, doesn't have a defined set of balls. So you know how in the Men's Champions League you have those like Adidas iconic footballs. They just use the Mitre Chelsea ones, which I'm pretty sure are the same as the WSL ones. So the home team can pick what balls they want. So that's always going to be, I guess, an advantage in some respects. And it would have been the same when Chelsea went to Bayern Munich. So the ref's happy with it. I mean, I suppose it doesn't really matter. So I wouldn't read too much into that. In terms of...
Well, also changing... because Sarah Zadrazil clearly didn't have a problem kicking the ball.
Well, exactly. And in terms of change rooms, I think with what's happening with COVID, like the change room situation is kind of a bit shit anyway. You know, I've been to plenty of men's games where they're showering in like a temporary wooden box that's been built by some bloke in like some groundsman, and they've managed to attach a hose into a shower head. So I wouldn't necessarily say that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. But I would like to find out more before casting any judgment. I just would be surprised if that's something that, you know, you would go to that extreme or intentional things to do. And it's not just a matter of circumstance of it being in COVID situations where, you know, you can't access the same sort of things. You can't have the same setup as you would for an away team. People aren't allowed in certain areas. It's all kind of cornered off. I would like to know how, you know, it compares to what WSL players have been experiencing at King's Meadow throughout the season. and whether it's just been like this all season, which is a bit shit anyway for any away side, or it's something that, you know, might have been cooked up to get some sort of advantage. I don't know, but I think that is, I don't know, it's a bit much.
In the other leg, Barcelona beat Paris Saint-Germain 2-1 at home, going through 3-2 on aggregate after 1-1 in Paris in the first leg. Flo, fantastic atmosphere in this one. It was a game that made me realise football and fans are coming back, and that spirit, that sound, that kind of ephemera just really makes the hairs on your arm stand up. And watching this game was really amazing, being able to hear the crowd in Barcelona and some fabulous goals from Lika Martins, a very early goal, beautifully taken the inside of her right foot, curling it round the Endler in the Paris Saint-Germain goal, was an amazing way to start. And then it kind of a running theme of a lot of games today. There was two goals in really quick succession. Martins gets another one, and then a couple of minutes later, Marie-Antoinette Katoto again got another goal. Again, we're seeing these great reactions, kind of instinctive finish from the forward from a corner. The ball bobbles down, and then she just kind of predicts where the movement and the flight of the ball is going to end up and gets her toe on it. It was a really amazing game, really electric, much like the Chelsea-Bayern game. Lots of counter-attacking, end-to-end, coast-to-coast. Both teams really going for it, especially late on. It felt like Paris Saint-Germain were going to get something. I think having beaten Lyon, they had the pressure of taking out the champions, and therefore they felt kind of destined for the final. And you saw in their players, they were really, really, really crushed at the final whistle, because it felt like maybe they'd done enough to be the kind of champions elect. But I think at the end of the day, Flo, like you said, Barcelona are the best team in this Champions League, and I think they'll probably go into the final as favourites.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because Chelsea coped with not being the best team in this semi-final setup, so maybe that won't be so much of an issue because they've got players that can just be so clinical in the most important moments. And one of the best goalies in the world right now, Anne-Katrin Berger, is in such good form. Even though there are a couple of moments today where she still looked a little bit indecisive and a little bit weak at corners, and you know, Barcelona will probably certainly target that, she's still such a good shot stopper. Unbelievable reactions. And she proved that today really late on when she kind of stuck her foot out to stop that chance going in. So, yeah, I it's going to be really exciting. And I hope it's not kind of like a shootout in the terms that, like, two sides, not that they wouldn't put it all on the line, because obviously they will, it's a final. But you know what I mean? Where it's just kind of like everyone, they're just so worried about conceding and creating space and opening gaps that they play it too safe. I mean, Chelsea were fairly defensive today in how they lined up and in their formation, but it didn't actually necessarily play out like that. And Bayern didn't press them that much. They were quite happy to kind of sit back, wait for Chelsea to make a mistake or just pick off a pass and then kind of go at Chelsea and counter and find that space. So it was an interesting matchup. So just going into the final, I just wonder how both teams are going to play it. Are we going to see Chelsea try and set up to prevent the kind of full force of Barca's attack? Or are we just going to see Emma Hayes just like risk it all and it's going to be like 4-3 or something mad?
Yeah, I'm going to be interested to see what Barcelona do today against Paris Saint-Germain. Kira Hamrari was dropped again, put on the bench. They've kind of been mixing up a lot of their teams, leg by leg, game by game. So it's kind of hard to predict. I mean, not dissimilar to Chelsea. It's going to be hard to predict exactly how Barca go for it today. I mean, they always have fantastic wing play, but today I thought Graham Hansen and Martins were phenomenal and gave Moroni and Ashley Lawrence a really hard time, who've been a great player to Paris Saint-Germain. But I thought out wide, they were really out-battled in this one, Paris Saint-Germain. And Formiga did a great job, again, without Hamrowry being there, with Patry kind of in the middle of the Barcelona midfield, was winning a lot of the ball. And I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, Ingle was back in the midfield today. Obviously, Magda Eriksson was fit. But what will we see in the middle of the Chelsea midfield? How many defensive midfielders? Will they go for more of a 4-3-3 or more of a 4-2-3-1? I think it's going to be interesting to see how they try and balance Barcelona, who today kind of owned the ball, but Paris Saint-Germain were able to counterattack really quickly, especially with Sandy Baltimore having a fantastic game and Formiga, like I said, just winning everything. And I think Chelsea, again, watching today's game, they reminded me of how good they are at being adaptable, how good they are at playing in different ways. And I thought the playing a more open game today, I thought, suited them more so than the first leg, where Neve Charles was able to flip play from defence to attack really quick. Sam Kerr can do so much with so little. And I think that's going to be interesting to see if Barcelona are going to have that much possession like they did today. How are they going to kind of cope when Chelsea know that they can absorb, and then kind of break in an instant? So I think it's gonna be really interesting, tactical one, personnel one, and just a massive occasion. And like you said, Flo, that's on 2 weeks from now, I guess, on Saturday.
Yeah, Sunday the 16th of May.
And you'll be back in the pub?
My pub booking was cancelled yesterday.
Oh no!
Yeah, I've actually
What's
really
the story
got
behind
it.
That?
I don't know why. I just got an email from them saying your booking's been cancelled, so I've got to find a new pub to watch Champions League final, unless I'm working for it. But I'm not at the moment, so I will persevere to find a pub.
TBD.
Yeah.
More on that to come. All right, heading back to the English League, the FA Women's Super League, getting close to the finish now. Only one game to go for most teams?
One game to go now. Yeah, just Chelsea on Wednesday, which is the only games in
Make-up
hand
game.
That we have left.
Yeah. So Man City took back top spot, beating Birmingham 4-0. Kind of interesting, just sticking on Chelsea for a sec, to see if they have any fatigue or lack of concentration against Spurs on Wednesday, if that would mean the title wouldn't go to Chelsea. But we kind of feel like they've got the title sewn up.
Yeah, I was thinking about that today, because it's still actually, even though it's really advantaged Chelsea, like, City could win it.
I think if it was the Spurs of 2 months ago, I think we'd be feeling more spicy. But it feels like we've really lost a bit of oomph.
I think it's more the Reading game that I'm kind of getting excited about, because Reading are just so unpredictable. And even though Chelsea stuffed them at the Majeski early this season, I just feel like something could happen. I can't describe what it is. And Chelsea loved playing Reading last game of the season recently. It's happened a lot. but I don't know. I feel like, yeah, we've made a lot of assumptions. And you know, still up there.
Still up for grabs. So yeah, Man City beat Birmingham 4-0. A couple of Chloe Kelly goals there. Everton had a really, really tight one with Arsenal. Kate McCabe gave them the early lead, but Finnegan got an equaliser.
Can I just scale back to Chloe Kelly's injury?
Yes.
Which is quite a worrying one. Obviously, I haven't seen an update since seeing the clip, but I really hope it's not a bad injury. I'm hoping it's going to be more like a sort of Muren Mjelde knee twist rather than a, full ACL injury. But it looked bad, and she was in a lot of pain, and... Yeah, oh, I just hope. Yeah, I hope it's not a bad one, because she's in such good form, and you know, presume she was going to be going to the Olympic Games as well. So that would be such a gutting blow for such a young player to miss out on that opportunity. So, yeah, prayers up for Chloe Kelly. Hope to find out soon that she's going to be okay.
Yeah, she left the game on a stretcher, listener, if you didn't see it. And yeah, like Flo said, probably behind super friend Kirby, arguably England's most informed best player, maybe along with Lauren Hemp. Yeah, moving around the grounds, Villa 0-0 with West Ham. Everton lost at home 1-2 to Arsenal, but a really, really close game and a really important result for Arsenal. A 94th minute winner from the always brilliant Kim Little, giving Arsenal all but everything they need to qualify for the Champions League. They're ahead of Man United on 3 points and have better goal difference. So we think this will be enough for the Gunners to be in the pot next year. So a really, really big result there. Reading played a great game, really entertaining one against Brighton, winning 3-2 at home. Farrah Williams playing her last game at the Mad Stad, tucking away a kind of quasi Panenka penalty, clipped off into the right hand corner with a bit of a chippy loop. And Bristol City stick at rock bottom, losing 1-0 at home to Manchester United with a slightly chaotic Yana Daniels own goal bobbling in after a couple of shots in the box. Flo, what jumps at you?
Yeah, feel for Bristol City. That 1-0 against United is really, really frustrating, because they could have grabbed a point that would have brought them to within a point of Aston Villa, and obviously they've still got this last game of the season against Brighton, which I give them a really good chance at winning, because Villa have got to go to Arsenal on the last day. So, you know, I think Bristol City still have a really good chance at staying up, but that would have meant that, well, actually, they still would have had to get a win, wouldn't they? Because their goal difference is so bad. So it wouldn't have changed that much, I suppose, going into it. But yeah, it's just frustrating because it's another kind of gut-busting defeat for a team that relies so much on vibes to carry them through. So
vibes and heart. I thought they were good today as well. Kyrus Skeels on loan, you know, 18, 19-year-old on loan from Reading, hit the bar in the first half and then has another big chance in the second half that was saved by Mary Earps. And you just think, yeah, these really, really small moments kind of define a season, like you said. If they got a point today, maybe it wouldn't have made that much of a difference. But if they got the win, it changes everything. And I think it's frustrating because watching Bristol today, they're really short on quality, but their performance levels are really high and they gave everything today. And a bit of luck with the block going in off Yana Daniels at one end and then hitting the bar at the other. The margins are so small, and I think there's going to be a lot of existential questions when we review this season. But seeing Villa, who get another 0-0 today, okay, Villa actually played quite well midweek, had it got a 2-2 draw, but they were equalising the 90th minute. It feels like we've seen Villa come out of their shell. We've seen a little bit more out of Iwabuchi, and actually Villa did attack a lot more today, 6 shots on goal. But it feels like Villa are going to be rewarded for kind of settling, whereas Bristol are getting outdone for these kind of courageous defeats.
Yeah, and just to extend on that, I'm kind of like, what Aston Villa bringing to the table? Players that I really respect and admire, a coach and Gemma Davies that I really respect and admire. So I want them to have like a personality. I want to know what they're about, what they get, you know, what part they're going to play in the WSL, because I feel like all the other teams have quite a solid identity right now. A lot of that comes from the personality of their coaches, because we have a lot of big personalities in there for WSL, which I think is brilliant, because I think it's great to bring in fans and also great for the media in terms of, you know, selling this competition. It's great entertainment. But Villa are the only ones where I'm like, who are you? Like,
well, I think, yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And I think they had a lot more personality when Gemma Davies was the coach. They've had 4 draws in a row, which arguably is going to give them safety. 0-0 against West Ham, 2-2 against Bristol, 1-1
against
Birmingham.
Next season, they cannot just carry on being some 0-0 boring team that defends fairly well most games but doesn't score goals. I mean, that is just depressing. Like, I want to see a bit more from them if they're going to stick around in the WSL, because at least with someone like Bristol City, like, if they're going to go down, they're going to go down screaming, shouting and fighting for their lives. And that's why I want to see if it's chaos, it's entertaining still. And I just feel like Villa just play it so safe. I just hope that this is a one-off and next season, like, we see a bit more from them, a bit more, I guess, ambition. But it's not like they haven't been ambitious with some of their recruitment. I think, well, you know, Iwabuchi especially, but a bit more vision in how they want to play, rather than ever since Big Knot came in, it's obviously just been damage limitation. But yeah, just boring.
Yeah, like I was saying, I think they were a bit better today, so I don't want to totally bury them. But another 0-0 with West Ham. The point looks to have given West Ham safety, who they have 15 points and a much better goal difference than Bristol. So West Ham are safe. Birmingham are safe after a massive equaliser in the 96th minute midweek that had an absolute dog pile on the pitch, including Carlo Ward getting involved with their players. We'd love to see it. So Birmingham looks safe. It's really just between Villa and Bristol now at the bottom with 14 points and 12 points respectively. And like Flo said, Bristol are going to need a big result against Brighton. Probably goal of the day for me, Flo, speaking of Brighton, Lee scoring that absolute worldie on the half volley against Reading. What did you think of that?
Yeah, unbelievable goal. Unbelievable goal.
Wacky. Wacky but beautiful.
But I'm just so glad to see Farrah Williams score in that one. Just so apt. And she got guard of honour as well before the game. So I just thought that was lovely. And saying goodbye to a legend, can't really believe it. But yeah, I thought I did. For some reason, I just thought Farrah Williams is going to play like well into her 40s. So the idea of her not being in the WSL is very strange to me. But I'm glad that she got a goal, and I hope she scores next weekend as well, because, yeah, she needs to go out on a bang.
They might slightly be on the beach as well. And like you said, Reading are a really up and down side. But I think it is a big result for them. They jump Brighton in the table into sixth place. And you kind of feel like that's about right for Reading. You know, they're not one of the top four. They're not Everton. But they want to be the best of the rest. And I think the result today is a big indicator of that. Also going to be the last game at home for Anning Harrod-James, who is going to be signing for the North Carolina Courage in the NWSL at the end of the season. So kind of a big day for her as well. I think she's had a great season. I think she's played every minute. I don't know if she's missed a single kind of bit of play. So it's going to be huge for her to leave. I think she's been a great servant for the club. And I think that was big for her. Emma Koivisto came off at halftime in this one. Haven't had any intel if it was an injury or tactical. I'll get back to you, Koivisto stands, when I have the info. Anything else
You, Soph Lawson. Anyone
and
else?
Mia Erickson.
And Hope Powell.
Shout out Mia
Erickson.
Mia Erickson.
Four group WhatsApp.
Oh, mate, if we got Hope Powell in the WhatsApp group, it would pop off. Anything else on the WSL before we drop down a league? It was the final day in the Women's Championship.
No, I feel like I've talked a lot of garbage. So let's move on.
Let's move on. So quick roundup of the Women's Championship. Blackburn Rovers 1, Sheffield United 2. 90th minute goal by Jake Pennock, giving the Blades a great win, putting them in fourth spot. I'm tipping them for the to win the title next year. Get ahead of that, listener.
Katie Wilkinson scored. Put your bets on now.
Put the bets
I'm
on.
Still, I'm still pushing for Diana Silva, Villa Player of the Season next year now. I'm rolling over my prediction.
I was going to say, we got to go back to the first episode we ever did to look at our preseason predictions. But Diana Silva is still yet to score a goal, and we were both so hyped.
With the stands.
You got to have a laugh. You got to have a laugh. So yeah, Kate Wilkinson scored that opener for Sheffield U, gives her 18 goals on the season, which is mental. And I think she's going to be the women's... I think she's finished top scorer of the league. So keep an eye on her if she next year in the champ or if she even gets a move going up. Palace beat Lewis 2-1. Lewis finishing fifth in the table, which I think is a huge achievement for them. They had a really, really great second half of the season. Imi Umutong in particular, fantastic signing in January. So excited to see how they kick on. Palace as well, great win. Move up to seventh. And they've shown they're really, really hard to beat and kind of part of that middle group of teams like London City Lionesses and Blackburn Rovers and Lewis. Durham got the kind of the biggest result of final day in the Women's Championship, beating Coventry 7-1. Big statement for Durham, who have maybe overperformed finishing second, only losing once this season. Coventry were very much on the beach, being safe from relegation, but second bottom in the table. But still a huge result for Durham, and it's going to be interesting to see if they can replicate the magic that they were able to put on the pitch this year. Champions Leicester City lifted the trophy and beat Charlton 4-0. Another goal for Tash Flint and two for Hannah Kane. Interesting to see how Tash Flint adapts to the FAWSL next year after a couple of years away.
And they were at the King Power as well, which was really nice. No fans, obviously.
Great to see.
Really nice.
Yeah, shout out Hannah in Canada.
Yeah.
I bet she was enjoying those
Love
scenes,
the
lifting
content.
The trophy. And Liverpool finishing third, 2-2 draw with London City Lionesses. Flo, I'm going to let you talk about what's going on with the possibility of Matt Beard taking over there.
Yeah, an annoying one for my Bristol City vibes stands, because there's nothing like killing the vibe.
Did it upset the vibes
of maternity Matt Beard by this news? My sources tell me it's not a done deal, and I know Emma Saunders from BBC tweeted something similar. And she reports and covers Liverpool quite a lot, and she's been doing updates throughout this lengthy recruitment process, which has been the longest search for a new manager, I think, since Alex Ferguson left Man United. It's been ridiculous. They obviously still haven't announced who it's going to be, and that decision hasn't been confirmed or officially offered to someone yet. Matt Beard did apply. So it's, you know, it sounds like it's not like he doesn't want the
job.
Some
truth.
But it certainly hasn't been confirmed yet. And yeah, I think obviously Bristol City were frustrated because two most important games of their season really were coming up in terms of saving and surviving. And it's an unwanted distraction. So yeah, we'll see what happens. I think it's an interesting move if he does go, because, you know, he had a lot of success there, and Liverpool does seem a bit like a poison chalice at the moment. So to go back to somewhere where you have really great, happy memories, winning back-to-back titles, it's a risky one. But he's a great personality, he's a great coach, a great guy, and he's probably exactly what they need, to be honest. I think morale is especially low there, and he really will, you know, get the vibes going. So perhaps it's a great opportunity for him to taste a bit more success again. But I just think, yeah, it's hard when you go back to somewhere and you don't want to kind of ruin all the great memories you had.
Do you think he would think about bringing on Pharrell Williams as an assistant coach? Get the band back together.
That would be interesting. Yeah, I haven't actually chatted to either of them about what it was like working together. So I don't know if it's, you know, like if they worked particularly well together. And like, I did an interview recently with Pharrell Williams, which I've got to write up 1,600 words, and I'm slightly panicking by Tuesday. And like it's giving me sleepless nights.
We gotta finish this podcast immediately.
And yeah, she said she always has so much respect for her managers, so I'm sure like they really got along. But she always talks a lot about Hope Powell and Mo Marley and what they gave her on and off the pitch. So that'd be an interesting one, because Farah said that she feels ready to coach and be part of a coaching setup in the WSL, not to be a head coach or a manager. But that would be cool. I would love to see that. Maybe Gemma Bonner comes back after her stint in Louisville and joins the coaching setup as well. That'd be great. A little reunion.
Bonner is free.
Hashtag free Bonner.
No, hashtag Bonner is free. It's been done.
Yeah.
She's gone. All right. Well, look, anything you want to say about the NWSL? I'll give people a quick roundup.
Gotham, my prediction, through to the final, baby. I told ya.
Boom. Yeah, so Gotham drew 0-0 with Racing Louisville minutes before we hit the record button, listener, today, which puts them as top of the East versus the Portland Thorns, who are top of the West. Portland will play Houston in a few hours, but the result is meaningless. Portland have 3 wins from 3 and will be going through to the next round. The 0-0 today finished off a slew of 0-0 results after the goal-a-thon that was in the kind of early last stage of the NWSL results. But we had a 0-0 with Washington Gotham, can't talk. 0-0 with North Carolina Courage or Orlando Pride, and then a brilliant 3-2 out in Seattle between the Chicago Red Stars and the OL Reign. A really, really great goal and assist for Ciara King in that one. Definitely go and find that, because that was a highlight for me. Definitely put some interesting questions on teams like Chicago Red Stars, who made the Challenge Cup final, made the 2019 NWSL Championship final. They find themselves fourth out of 5 teams in the West, so going to be some conversations going on there. Meanwhile, Portland are kind of continuing their domination, and like Flo said, Gotham are here and they've made a huge statement by topping the East ahead of the North Carolina Courage, who are arguably the team to beat in all of the NWSL. So it's going to be really interesting as the regular season comes ahead, which starts in 2 weeks, the day before the Women's Champions League final. So get that in your diary. And all the regular season games are out, and it's going to be a massive, massive few months of women's football stateside. And if you're looking for some bonus women's footy, because you can't get enough, listener, the NCAA women's soccer tournament is going on right now, and there's lots of free streams on that. Maybe some funny timings if you're in Europe, but really, really worth a watch. Lots of stars of the future, Yasmin Ryan at TCU being one of them to keep an eye on. Flo, anything else before we get out of here?
I don't think so. What a game.
What a life.
What a game. Yeah. I might watch the whole 90 minutes back, actually. I just want to sit through that again. Mental.
Favourite goal?
Oh, it's got to be the Zavarin one. That was unbelievable.
Favourite moment?
Kirby scoring that last one.
I like the
Penelope
Harder. You know
what, actually? The Penelope Harder one, because of the Jess Carter reaction. Sellies. Yeah.
Yeah. I did. Jess Carter had a block in about the 87th minute. That was, or maybe it was in the second half, but that was really, really sick. She just had like a sliding tackle block, and that kind of stood out. But anyway, we've got to get out of here. We are Relatively Football. You're a listener. Follow us at Twitter, at Relatively Foot, Instagram, at Relatively Football, and let us know how you're feeling, good or bad. Rate, review, tell your friends. Let's build community. And you go and find Flo in the pub. She's very nice.
I pronounced Zadrazil wrong, so I said Zavarin, and my brain has melted. So, good evening, one and all.
That's what we got an edit button for. Put it on the B-sides. All right, I'll let you get to bed. Ta-ra.